world, and welcome to our first Ask Udi podcast, the podcast where listeners get their questions on SOA and web services answered. This is your host, Udi Dahan, bringing you the cold, hard facts you need to make decisions about SOA. I am the software simplest, helping you keep it simple. This podcast is brought to you exclusively by Dr. Dobbs Journal, leading the computer press in covering practical technology, languages, platforms, and tools, online at www.ddj.com. Also, don't forget to visit my blog, www.udidahan.com, for more information. For those of you who don't know me, let me take a minute to introduce myself. I'm a Microsoft Solutions Architect MVP, .NET Development Expert, and SOA Specialist. When I'm not writing or speaking at conferences, I pay the bills as the Chief Architect of Corentech, a software solutions provider in Israel, specializing in the architecture and design of large-scale, mission-critical systems for the enterprise and government sectors. Our question this week comes from Dan, who asks, does SOA mean the end of OO? Well, that question's been popping up quite a lot recently, and a number of people are saying no, that object orientation is here to stay and that SOA adds on that. Another group of people are saying, well, OO as a programming language for implementing SOA will stay, but the object-oriented analysis and design will be replaced with service-oriented analysis and design. And from what I hear, that worries a lot of people that have been investing heavily in UML and object orientation. And I guess the real question becomes, why did we need SOA in the first place, and what are we using object orientation for today, and how do those things go together? So if we start at the side of object orientation, we have to sort of take the historical perspective and realize that object orientation grew from the single application type of development, whereas SOA, the way that a lot of people are viewing it today, is as an integration style. So they both sort of attack the problem of development of large systems from different ends of the spectrum. Object orientation from the bottom up and SOA from the top down. So that's where they're coming from. Now, once we start getting into object orientation, not so much as the programming language of choice, if it's C#, VB.NET, Java, C++, or what have you, but actually bring it up and say, okay, now, instead of focusing on the language, if it's object-oriented or not, saying, let's start looking at the object-oriented design of a given application. Well, that sort of brings about the question, well, what is an application? And that's something that has become even more and more difficult once we start getting into the distributed application type of question. So once we start looking at object-oriented design, then we view the system not only as a group of objects, but we go more the UML style, say, okay, they are not only objects or in classes, but there are packages and there are interfaces, and the interactions between them are object-oriented, meaning that we prefer calling methods on objects, you know, ask rather than dictate. Say, do this method rather than going into their private members and fiddling around with the data ourselves. So that's object orientation. But once we sort of climb up the chain and say, okay, now we have these groups of classes that are interacting together, and we have packages that group related objects together, and we're going to build a given application out of this. The important thing to understand that object orientation was born, or rather started, in the in-process area, as in a single application, a single process that was running, in many cases even only a single thread, that this is how we're going to structure our program in this environment of a single application, a single process running on a single machine, and everything worked, to tell you the truth, pretty well, and things are continuing to work well in that respect. So for those people that are viewing SOA as possibly a replacement for object orientation, if you are building a single application that is going to be running on a single process on a single machine, SOA probably is not going to solve any problems that OO does not cover today. So in that respect, you know, object orientation is here to stay for those kinds of problems. Once we grow the problem, say, okay, now it's not only a single process, Now we have numerous processes on the same machine, or numerous processes on numerous machines, or numerous data centers. The important thing becomes that we stuck a network in the middle, or rather, we've made our application a distributed application. Personally, I never liked that word, distributed application, because it sort of implied that this whole was indeed a whole, and that it was somehow fractured among a bunch of machines without really any necessary rules or regulation as to what goes where and how the interactions between those pieces occur. And I think it was probably 20 years ago when, probably 25 years ago, when the idea came out, said, you know, object orientation is great, let's do distributed objects, or rather, let's keep this same paradigm and have it work distributed as well. Well, history has shown us that wasn't particularly successful, to say the least. And once we sort of realize, okay, a distributed application is not a monolithic creature, but rather a bunch of processes that are running on separate machines that need to communicate together, and how they communicate will dictate, by and large, the success of that system, success in terms of performance, in terms of scalability, in terms of reliability, and all the quality attributes of a system. So object orientation, or object-oriented analysis and design, really failed to bring the advantages it gave single process, single computer deployment systems. It was unable to grow into the distributed sense. And that's where we were sort of left in the lurch from object orientation. And not so long ago, we talked about tiers or layers being mapped to tiers. And SOA sort of came along about a year, year and a half ago, and put an end to all that and said, no, what you need is services. Now, services really being a catchphrase for what we are going to distribute. This is not only a unit of design as an object or a class. It is also a unit of deployment. And on top of the fact that it is both a unit of design and a unit of deployment, the interactions between services are different than interactions between objects. The interactions between objects being often chatty, in process, we expect each call to occur blindingly fast. Whereas when we are calling inter-process or inter-machine, we have to acknowledge the fact that there is network latency there, and we don't necessarily know what the distance is between those two computers that are talking. So we can't just sort of take the same object-oriented semantics and make services behave the same way, or we will get the same problems as we had with distributed objects. So that's really where SOA comes in and said, what you have is a service. A service is something that is quite a bit larger than an object. A service would probably contain numerous objects in and of itself, managing its own state, whether in memory or in a database, being hosted separately, being run on a separate computer. And the facts that SOA brings to the table, say, you know, distribution is a primary concern. You have to face it. It totally affects the way that services interact together. So services interact differently than objects. Services will be built probably out of objects in an object-oriented language. So does SOA mean the end of object orientation? Absolutely not. It solves a different problem. Not only a different problem, it solves a problem that was previously solved very poorly by object orientation. It came to fill a void. And that is really the coexistence between services and objects. The fact that everybody is saying, you know, SOA is the future, SOA is the future, that doesn't mean that we have to throw out the baby with the bathwater and say anything that's in the past is no good anymore. So, Dan, I hope that answers your question. If you have questions that you'd like to see answered on the show, please send me email at podcast@udidahan.com, and I'll be happy to answer them on the next show. So thanks again, and this wraps up our first Ask Udi podcast. I hope you had as much fun as I did.